Welcome those of you to today's Clean Internet Seminar that will look at the Brownfields RLF grant guidelines. That's been sponsored by EPA Region 9 with support from EPA's Region 8 and Region 10. My name is Jean Vallant. I'm coming to you from an EPA program in D.C. where I'll help to moderate today's Clean Seminar. As I mentioned earlier, you want to have a copy of the presentation materials open in front of you today, and I would ask everyone when you're looking at the slides that we move past slide number 1 on to slide number 2. For Clean Seminars, each individual participant must manually advance through the materials at verbal cues from the presenter. So if you're just joining us, I'm on slide number 2, the housekeeping slide. If you have a hard copy, simply turn the page. Those of you that are looking at the slides online can use the numbered links that appear on the left to jump through. Again, slide number 2 is where I am. You can also use the orange icons at the top of the slides to move through the materials. The arrow pointing to the right will advance you one slide. The arrow to the left will move you backwards one slide. For those of you on the telephone lines, please place your phone on mute. Do not put the call on hold. There could be commercials or music that will be disruptive. We will take a break to get questions, and at that time you can unmute. Otherwise, stay muted using your own mute button or simply hitting *6 to mute your lines. You can also use the question mark icon that appears at the top of the slides. As long as your pop-up blockers are disabled, if you click that button, a new window will open up, which will let you type up electronic comments or questions for the instructors. And in fact, I would encourage you to go ahead and type up your questions at any point, and when we get to that break for Q&A, I'll be able to read your questions out loud, so submit them as soon as they occur to you. I want to remind everyone that the session today is being recorded and will be available for free download and replay. About 1 week from now, you'll automatically get an email when that recording is available. I think that's the end of the official reminders that I have for everybody today. So I'm going to ask everyone to move along to slide number 3, which is the start of the official materials for today's session. And I'm going to hand over to your presenters, Ted Lanzano from EPA Region 8 and Nomi Ermerich-Ford from EPA Region 9. Ted and Nomi, feel free.
All right, thanks, Jean. Hi, everybody. This is Ted Lanzano. I'm a Brownfields Project Manager in EPA Region 8, and I'm going to deliver the first half of this talk, and then I'll pass it over to Noemi Ermerich-Ford from Region 9 to deliver the last half. The purpose of today's presentation, as Jean mentioned, is really to provide a comprehensive overview of the Brownfields Revolving Loan Fund guidelines. So if you're applying for an RLF grant, or would like to learn more about the guidelines, then this is the right place for you. I have on the first slide that is presented to EPA Regions 8, 9, and 10, and of course all other regions are welcome to listen in. I just wanted to point out before I get started that this is not an introduction to Brownfields or an introduction to the grant type, different EPA grant types. We did just deliver a more basic presentation, and that is on the CLUIN archive if you're interested in taking a look. So I'm going to advance to slide number 4, just to quickly go over the agenda. I'm going to provide a brief RLF program overview, and then quickly review the RLF threshold criteria, and really most of the time today is going to be spent explaining the RLF grant ranking criteria. That is where the bulk of the proposal is contained. And Noemi will finish off with application prep tips, and we'll have some resources and contact info, and then time for some questions and discussion at the end. On slide 5 is some info on the grant program overview. And basically, as most of you probably know, if you're considering applying for this type of grant, an RLF provides funding to an eligible entity to make low-interest loans or subgrants for cleanup activities at brownfield sites. Up to about $1 million per entity is available, and there are funds for hazardous substances and funds for petroleum contamination, and those can all be requested in the same proposal. Up to 50% of the grant may be used for cleanup subgrants, and I will be talking more about that later on in the presentation. There's a cost share of 20%, and the period of performance is 5 years, but we find that many of our RLF grantees extend this well beyond 5 years, especially as supplemental funds are awarded to those grants. Moving on to slide number 6, in FY 2012, so just this past grant cycle, there were 13 new RLF grant awards for approximately $10.5 million. All indications that we have so far are that we're going to have roughly the same amount of funding available in FY13. And so probably a similar number of grants in this next cycle. And I just wanted to point out that the RLF grant is not always for everyone. It's a very specific grant program, and you really need to make sure you want to be in the business of making loans and making sub-grants for cleanup projects, and there's a real need for this in your community. So really, before you make the effort to prepare a proposal, just make sure that you're committed to the program, you have a wealth of potential borrowers, sub-grantees, and sites, and you have a well-defined strategy and a good program to implement this. So on slide number 7 is the RLF application timeline, and this is already dated. As many of you know, the release of our guidelines can be delayed, unfortunately. So right now, it's my understanding that we're looking at the request for proposals will be issued mid-September, maybe late September, and they will be due sometime in November. Stay tuned to our website on epa.gov/brownfields, and we'll have all that's where they'll be released, and that's where the updated information will be contained. Spring 2013 is when our RLF grants will be awarded, as well as all the other assessment and cleanup competitive grants. So because the FY13 guidelines have not been released, I just wanted to point out again that that our presentation is based on the FY12 guidelines. We do not anticipate any major changes. They'll be roughly the same. There may be a few changes here and there, so just keep an eye out. But basically what we're presenting today will be pretty consistent with the FY13 guidelines. So on slide number 8, is just a quick distinction between the threshold criteria and the ranking criteria. These are the two main sections that you'll be addressing in your proposal. The threshold refers to the minimum eligibility criteria requirements. You must meet these. These are pass-fail. And then once you do, you go on to the ranking criteria, and these are where we have questions with specific point values, and your proposals will be evaluated based on your responses to the ranking criteria. On slide number 9 is for the RLF grant, there are 5 threshold criteria. The first one is just ensuring that you are an eligible applicant. Eligible applicants for RLFs can be municipalities, states, tribes, redevelopment agencies, governments, government entities created by state legislature, among several others. Nonprofits are not eligible for RLF grants. New for FY13 is that existing RLF grantees can apply in this cycle, and they would receive a second RLF grant. So that is new for this year. Also for the threshold, you're going to want to describe your jurisdiction, get a letter from the state or tribal environmental authority recognizing their support for the project. And then probably the most involved of the 5 threshold is the 4th bullet. Well, you'll talk about your oversight structure and how you will oversee cleanups, which is generally through the state voluntary cleanup program. But also in this, you'll need to have a legal opinion that says you have the authority to access and secure sites in the event of an emergency or default of loan, and the legal opinion will need to address that you have the legal authority to perform the actions necessary to manage an RLF grant. So definitely keep that in mind as you're preparing. And then you will also need to show how you will meet the cost share. So we can answer questions on that later. I do want to spend most of the time on the threshold or on the ranking criteria here. So for RLF coalitions, you'll describe how all coalition partners are eligible entities. They need to be separate legal entities, and they all need to be eligible. And the coalition partners will need to have a letter that just describes their role and the participation, and then those will be attached to your proposal. So moving into the ranking criteria on slide number 11, there are four main sections. And the first one is community need, then program description and feasibility of success, community engagement and partnerships, and then program benefits. It's really linear in nature. So, you know, the first part, you describe your problem and your need. Then you describe how you're going to address that problem. Then how you're going to engage the community in the process. And then the overall benefit that you're going to achieve. So just a couple tips on the ranking criteria. Make sure you answer all of the questions. Many have more than just one part. And some of the questions are somewhat embedded in the criteria. So reviewers would be quick to take off a point or more if you do not answer all of the questions in each of the criteria. Also, there's some really relevant information in the opening paragraphs for each criteria, so be sure to take a look at that as well, with info on how to respond. And then allow space so you can respond to all the criteria within the page limit. All right, so moving on to slide 12, the first section of the ranking criteria is the community need. And here you really want to paint a picture about the effects of brownfields on your community. You're going to want to convince the reader that brownfields have had an effect on your community socially, environmentally, and financially, and you have a real need for this grant to address this problem. So on slide 13 is the first subsection of the community need, and this is the health, welfare, and environment piece. And so here you're going to describe the effects brownfields currently have on your community by providing info on the number and size of brownfields and the health, welfare, and environmental impacts. There are a few key things that you're going to want to include in this section. Again, first of all, you're going to want to create a unique identity for the reviewer. So define your jurisdiction. Bring out that cultural history and the causes of decline in that area. You're going to want to define your target community. So what is the overall focus of your grant and why? Maybe it's that riverfront area that's been neglected for years, that has some contamination, that you think there's tremendous redevelopment potential. Could be somewhere else. But be sure you define the overall focus of your grant early. You're going to want to talk about also the type of industries that have led to the brownfield sites. So, again, bring out that cultural history so the reviewer has some sort of identity, and I think that would be really helpful. Also include other environmental issues that have resulted in disproportionate impacts on our communities besides just brownfields. And then finally, I think one of the most important pieces of this section is, you know, you'll hear Noemi and I say you have to be specific in your proposals. Well, one of the ways to be specific here is to show that you have actual sites that are ready to go. So go ahead and list out those sites and tell us the name and tell us, give us a little intro on those sites so we know that you actually have sites ready to go, and when we give this grant to you, you're going to move on it and address the contamination at those sites. Okay, slide 14. So as I mentioned, you'll describe the health, welfare, and environmental impacts. Don't get caught leaving any one of these out. Health, any sort of health department statistics, any idea if the target community's health has been affected by brownfields, welfare, the social negatives associated with brownfields, blight and crime, and then the environmental impacts to your brownfields. You know, if you've done assessments at these sites, and if you're applying for an RLF grant, it's good that you have already done assessments at your priority sites, so you're going to want to show what the environmental condition is. You know, these are sort of the things that you see in your communities. And then on slide 15, lost track here. So anyway, on slide 15, you'll provide information on the health and welfare of sensitive populations in your targeted communities. I often see that reviewers leave out sensitive populations in their communities or in their proposals. So it's good to include this: children, elderly, women of childbearing age, and minorities, just to name a few that you can include. Now, the last section here of the community needs is the financial needs section. So here you're going to describe the economic impact of brownfields on your community. A key part of this section is to describe is to show demographic statistics to show the reader there is actually a financial need in your community. And it's helpful to use the sample table provided in the guidelines. And in that table, you'll show the demographic information for your specific target community and then compare that with city, county, state, and national averages, again, to show that there's a financial need. Some of the common stats you can include are unemployment rates, poverty rates, minority rates, per capita income, and then, of course, don't forget to cite your information. All right, moving on to the next slide. And then the last piece of the financial need is describing some factors in your community that limit your ability to have your own cleanup resources. So it may be a very limited tax base or a declining population size that really limit your ability to draw resources for these problems, and just showing that you actually need this grant. And if you already have a Brownfields grant, whether it's an assessment or a cleanup or another RLF, then you'll describe why you need additional funding. Okay, so moving on to the next slide, which is slide number 18, is the program description section. And this one, in the FY12 guidelines, this one was worth 55 out of 100 points, so you want to make sure you dedicate adequate attention to this section. There are three main parts: program description, budget, and programmatic capability. So I'm going to start out with program description on slide 19. And this is the introductory piece where you're going to describe your Brownfields redevelopment program. So here you're going to want to give a strong impression right away that you can function as a long-term sustainable source of cleanup funding. Now, one of the things here is, if you're going to be truly a long-term source of funding and a sustainable program, you're really going to want to focus your program on loans. Subgrants are fully eligible at 50% of your grant, but by virtue of subgranting, you're depleting your loan pool. So I recommend that you get the most of your focus here is on actually making loans. That's what this program is all about. And then use subgrants to fill in financial gaps as needed. So you're going to describe your loan and subgrant program. And some of the things to include are the type of loans or subgrants that you're going to offer, how you're going to structure your loans, how you're going to select borrowers and projects, and having community input on that is always a good idea. What type of interest rates you're going to offer, and what sort of payback terms or loan terms you're going to offer. You know, again, on the loan terms, it's going to be a fine balance between meeting the developer or the borrower's needs of having something that they can pay back, but also meeting your needs of getting something paid back quickly so you can revolve those funds. Okay, so moving on to slide 20 is the type of applicants you envision using your RLF, why this is your target audience and your marketing approach. So really here, you're going to need to convince the reader that there are actually borrowers out there who are willing to take out a loan for cleanup. It might sound really simple and basic, but sometimes I read proposals and I see a very strong need, and I see a great program, but I'm just not convinced that anybody is going to want to take out a loan and invest in a cleanup project and a redevelopment project. So it's really important to show that you have borrowers out there who are interested in taking out your loans with this grant. Again, it's fairly basic, but I think it's also important. Now, the second section of this of this part here is to just to review your marketing strategy to reach out to potential borrowers. You're going to want to demonstrate that you have a system envisioned or in place to continuously seek out potential borrowers and sub-grantees that will sustain your program. And then also mention why that is, why that's an appropriate marketing strategy for your area. And then on slide 21 is the RLF team. And obviously this is a critical part of a functioning revolving loan fund program. And there's several key individuals that should be identified in your RLF team. The first one is the program manager, or really it's the project manager. This is the person who's responsible for all of the day-to-day operations of your revolving loan fund program. They coordinate with EPA. They coordinate with the borrowers. They coordinate with the state and make sure that everything is happening in their program. Obviously, a very critical role. Also very important is the fund manager. This is the person who's responsible for doing the loan underwriting, ensuring that prudent lending practices are implemented in your program, drafting the loan docs. This is a skill that's not always, contained in-house. So sometimes there are grantees who contract out for this sort of professional to be involved. But you're going to want to identify who that is, whether or not you have that in-house or if you're going to contract it out, and either way is just fine. Also another key team member is the Qualified Environmental Professional, or the QEP, and they will provide the environmental expertise to your loan program. Oftentimes, the project manager or even the municipality, the grantee, does not have this environmental expertise, and they need to contract out to secure an environmental professional to assist them with the project. And then also, you may need legal support with your RLF program. And then for coalitions, you're going to describe the role of each member, and how you're all going to work together, really, to implement this successful program. So how are the coalitions going to work? It may be that you also have a board or a RLF committee or a Brownfields committee that ultimately decides on projects. And if you do, this is a good place to go through that. Let's see. Slide 22 is information on the budget. So here you are going to prepare or demonstrate your budget, and we recommend that you use the sample budget table that is contained in the guidelines. You can prepare separate budget tables for petroleum and hazardous substances, or you can just distinguish them through separate line items, and that's fine too. Just a pointer is just to know your cost eligibility. If a reviewer doubts a task's eligibility, you will invariably lose points on that. So any sort of eligibility questions, just call EPA, check the FAQs, which are going to be posted directly with these guidelines when they're on the website. And if in question, maybe just don't use it. There is an administrative cost ban. We recommend that you don't even use the word administrative at all in the budget section, or maybe even outside of the proposal. But administrative costs, including things like indirect costs, are not eligible expenses in the RLF program. And as I mentioned, I think a big part here is to maximize grant funds for actually loans and subgrants. It's okay to have funds to show funds that are going towards community involvement and going towards your contractual and going towards personnel and the other necessary programs for an RLF, but the bulk of your funding really should be going towards loans, and then a much smaller portion should be going towards subgrants. You'll have a budget narrative describing each task in detail, and then you'll include a basis for the estimated cost as well, showing exactly how you calculated those budget items, so we can kind of see, oh yeah, that makes sense. They estimated $6,000 for travel. They're doing free trips here to there. We get it. So that's kind of the important to include that basis for the cost. Slide 23 is just a sample budget table. pretty self-explanatory there, I think. And then on slide 24 is your plan for tracking and measuring progress. So here you're going to talk about the different types of output-oriented performance measures and outcome-oriented performance measures. And sometimes these terms can get a little confusing. Outputs generally refer to the product, the activity, or good or service that you aim to produce. It's kind of like the widgets, so it's the number of brownfield sites, the number of cleanups, the number of loans, number of community meetings. And then your outcome-oriented measures are the results, the effects, or changes that occur from carrying out the activities in your grant. So that's the number of jobs created, the number of dollars leveraged through redevelopment, acres made ready for use. So you're just going to want to show that you have both outcome and output and outcome-oriented measures to track your progress. And then also on tracking your progress on slide 25, you're going to want to show that you can. You'll also use the required quarterly reports to track your progress. And especially for existing grantees, whether it's an assessment or a cleanup or an RLF, you're going to want to show that you use the Acres database. You don't necessarily have to like it, but you use it, and that you will continue to use it to track your progress. And then if you have any other tracking mechanisms, you can describe those as well. So moving on to slide 26. So this is the leveraging section. And as many of you know, it sometimes can take a lot of other resources beyond just the cleanup resources to complete a redevelopment. So you're going to want to talk about the other funds that you plan on leveraging for the overall redevelopment of the particular of your brownfield projects. It can be from local, state, federal, nonprofit sources, but it should address the assessment, any additional cleanup planning you need or cleanup money you need, and the redevelopment that you'll need. A key part of this section is, you know, to talk about the likelihood funding will actually happen during the life of during the grant. And I know that can be very difficult to do. But if you know already that you have a strong commitment from a source of funding, then for full points, you'll also need to have a commitment letter from that funding provider. So just something to keep in mind there. So that is all I have. I'm going to pass it over to Noemi now to talk about the programmatic capability section and the rest of the guidelines. Thanks, Noemi.
Okay, thanks, Pat. So now moving on to slide 27, looking at programmatic capability and past performance. In programmatic capability, what we're really looking at is for you to be able to demonstrate the ability that you have to manage grants. Earlier, he had talked about the staff that you would have on board, so talking about your qualified environmental professional, your RLF program manager, so it would be talking about their experience and then describing the management system that you have set up. How would you be able to manage this grant? One of the questions that we do ask is about adverse audits. Even though you may never have had an adverse audit, make sure that you make note of it, because if you overlook answering that question, you will get points taken off. Now, if you are a prior Brownfields grantee, let's say you've had an assessment grant, a cleanup grant, or even an RLF grant in the past, we then want to know and ask for specific questions about how have you managed and performed in this grant in the past. Did you spend all the money that was given to you? What did you accomplish with it? Did you comply and follow all the rules and regulations that EPA had asked? And then if there's any corrective grant actions that you might have had in the past, maybe describe that and talk about how those have already been corrected. So now moving on to slide 28. Looking at programmatic capability and past performance again, we're really, for the past performance, for those who have never received a Brownfields grant, you would still have to talk about and identify, you can't leave that section blank, you'd still need to talk about any federal or non-federal grants up to 5 years that you might have received, and talk about what you did with those. How did you follow their performance plan? What did you accomplish out of that? The same kind of questions that we would ask someone who had received a Brownfields grant. And again, you'd have to address whether you have any adverse audit findings. So moving on to slide 29. In this section, we're going to talk about community engagements and partnerships. And so what we're really looking at here is how are you planning to get the public involved in the process? So we're thinking, when we're talking about the public, we're talking about all types of partners that you might be working with. How do you plan to first identify them? Kind of how are you going to locate them? How are you going to make them be a part of your grant? And how are you going to get input from them so that you can combine that together with all of the local citizens in the community and kind of identify this plan that you might have? This really should be the easy part of writing the grant, but oftentimes we find that people overlook and don't spend enough time on this section. So in that community engagement plan, to get a little bit more specific, when we're asking you to describe what your plan is for involving the community, we're asking for it in a variety of ways. So if you have an assessment grant, how are they going to be involved in selecting sites that are going to be assessed? If you have a cleanup grant, how are they going to be involved in the cleanup planning? So if you already have a remedy selected, then how are you going to notify them and allow them to provide input to you on how you implement that remedy, as well as the site reuse planning? How are you going to allow them to be involved in what gets placed at the site and or in consideration for maybe some of the things that might be happening around the site? So in that process, we would want you to describe if the methods that you're using, are they appropriate for your target community, and tell us why. So, for instance, this is a really good opportunity for you to give an example to say, well, in the past, we've used public meetings through neighborhood association groups because we've heard from the public that that works well, and attendance there tends to be 75% more than when we have a city council meeting. So give us a reason for why that happens to be the appropriate method. By just stating it is the appropriate method may not be enough for you to be able to get full points. So in this talking about your community engagement plan, we also want you to talk about activities that you've already done. So a lot of times leading up to a redevelopment project, you've had tons of meetings leading up to what's going to happen at the site. So also describe not only what you're going to do, but what's been done in the past as well. So moving on to slide 31, in this community engagement plan, you really need to be thinking about what are the multiple ways that you'll be reaching out to your target community. So be looking at your partner's websites, is it press releases, is it public meetings, is it hosting meetings in the neighborhood, is it scheduling meetings as a part of someone else's agenda, are you going to do flyers, door-to-door communication. Just really identify what would be the appropriate method for your community. And oftentimes just recognizing if you're planning to do a lot of things online, have another method for those who may not have the capability to view stuff on websites or may not have access to computers, and talk about how they might be able to get information if you're planning to only do it electronically. So moving on to slide 32, as part of the community engagement and partnerships, we not only want to know what you're going to do with the community, but we also want to know what your partnerships are with the local, state, and tribal governments that may be in and around your project. So two that we ask specifically that we want you to describe, and don't just describe one and not the other, because as Ted said earlier, there's often questions embedded in there. You have to specifically discuss both of these. So how are you going to be working with these relevant government entities, and how are you partnering with them as part of the grant? So for instance, if you're really only going to be working with your state environmental agency and the health agency, local health department doesn't have a big role to play in it, then specifically state that you're only going to be working with the state entity and not the local entity, and then give a reason why. If you are working with your local health services agencies, then talk about how you would be working with them. Will they be able to come to public meetings and provide information to the community on health risks? Can they give information to sensitive populations? How might you be able to partner with them in this grant? And then talk about what their specific role would be. So moving on to slide 33, a big portion of the community engagement and partnerships is community-based organizations. We want to know if you list community-based organizations and or if you get letters from community-based organizations, we not only want to know what that community organization does, kind of a description, but we want to specifically know what is their role going to be in part of being involved in the RLF. So not only describe the organization, their role, but then be very explicit about the commitments that they will be making. So if you're planning to use community-based organizations to get the word out about your grant, then be specific about that and make sure that they're specific in the letter that they provide you, because we're really not looking for any type of form letter. So if you have, you know, five entities send the exact same letter in, you're probably not going to get points added for that. And again, we do not consider community-based organizations to be governmental entities. So getting a letter from your mayor's office, your planning department, your congressman and your senator, those aren't letters that we're looking for. We're looking explicitly for community-based organizations. So moving on to slide 34, these are examples of what we would consider to be community-based organizations. And so this would give you an idea of, like, local community development corporations, environmental nonprofits, churches, health organizations, educational institutions, just to name a few. Moving on to slide 35, the community-based organizations task. These are just some examples of what CBOs can do for your project. They can identify sites for you. They can provide financial, legal advice, and then just be explicit in your application about what they're going to be providing for you as part of the grant. Moving on to slide 36, the next area of ranking criteria is the welfare under public health, and under this we'll also be asking about economic benefits and green space, looking at infrastructure reuse, sustainable reuse, and then lastly talking about how you plan to track and measure your progress. So moving on to slide 37, we'll start first with the welfare and public health benefits. So in this section, again, I can't repeat it more. In this question, there's three things that are asked there. It's described the environmental, social, and or public health benefits. So make sure that you respond to all three of those and how those might be impacted based on the cleanup and redevelopment that's going to happen at your site. What are some of those direct or indirect benefits? And try to be as specific as possible. And sometimes being specific would be like relating, if you said earlier that under community need that, you know, you have high blood lead levels in your community, if that was a target for one of the sensitive populations for children with high blood lead levels, then when you get to this part, talk about some of those sites that you have that are unfenced, that are exposed to soil, and kids are able to trespass on there, and therefore this could be leading to high blood lead levels. Just something that would relate what you talked about earlier in your community need, now relating it back to what some of the public health benefits could potentially be. Some examples of social benefits are listed here. By now having a lot of these blighted areas redeveloped, you're going to reduce crime, you're going to get people moving back into the city, and then what I talked about earlier on, some of the examples of health benefits. So moving on to slide 38, these are some examples of environmental benefits, how you would have improved air, you'd have soil quality is obviously going to be improved because you're conducting remediation. Maybe some of these sites might have been impacting rivers and or lakes or oceans that might be near these sites. So talk about and give specific examples of how the cleanup of these sites and or the capping and or removal of the site contaminants would make for environmental benefits within your community. Moving on to slide 39, looking at the welfare under public health. This is, again, kind of what I was talking about earlier, describing how the nearby and sensitive populations will be protected from the contaminants. So during your cleanup and while remediation is ongoing, talk about what some of the efforts will be made to ensure that the sensitive populations aren't impacted. So in this, you could say that you'd be following state standards, and so state standards require that you have to control the dust, that you have to make sure you water the site as you're doing remediation, that, you know, the knowing that school times are from 7:30 in the morning, from 2 to 3:30, the truck traffic would not be happening during that time. So give specific examples of how you would ensure that sensitive populations would be taken care of. Moving on to slide 40, this is the economic benefits and or green space. So some projects may not have kind of green space components necessarily associated with them, because when you think of green space, most people think of a park or open area, but there are many projects that will have some element, even if it's tiny, of a green space, because you're probably doing some frontage where you have some trees planted or some streetscaping that's being done. So make sure that you describe that in your project and then specifically describe what the economic benefits are going to be. So again, we're looking to make sure that we're funding projects that are shovel-ready and that are going to be moving towards creating jobs and or leveraging dollars. And so be very quantitative in the estimates as much as you can. Talk about how property values might go up. There's just a variety of examples that you would be able to use. Moving on to slide 41, and it's not only economic benefits that, you know, we're looking at. It's also describing some of the non-economic benefits. So is your project going to create any nonprofit or charitable reuse? Is there some kind of community center or is there some kind of government building that might be going up? Is it going to be affordable housing? And here's some other examples you could use for green space. Are you doing some kind of wetlands protection or having wetlands built in? Is it a small pocket park? Is it a trails to rail? So there's a variety of examples there that you could use. But just make sure that you, if you're not going to have it, then explicitly state that you're not going to have it. But make sure that you answer the question. Moving on to slide 42, the environmental benefits from infrastructure. So, again, we're just looking to make sure that in the remediation that you're going to have moving forward and reuse, that you are planning to have some benefits from infrastructure reuse. And so most cities already have green building ordinances or they have some kind of LEED certification standards or stormwater controls that they've put in place. Talk about any transit-oriented development that you might have. These are examples that you would use within your application. On slide 43, so we're kind of done. I mean, that last slide was, moving back to slide 43, I'm going to now jump to what are some preparation tips for you. So as Ted said, the guidelines have not come out yet, but we anticipate that there won't be any changes for the FY13 guidelines is based on FY12. If you're interested and you want to maybe talk to a prior grantee, you can go on the website that's listed there to see who's received grants in the past that are located near you, maybe talk to them. Just make sure that you understand the person who's reading your application will probably not know very much about your community, so don't use acronyms or things that you're used to saying within your local area because the person may not know. And again, just make sure you address all the criteria. Slide 44, each proposal. On the back of the RLF guidelines will be a checklist. Just make sure that you check that checklist and that you have everything listed in there. Do not go over the page limits. When we give a page limit, if you have writing over that page limit, that gets torn off the application and we're not able to read it. So any ranking criteria that you would have there, you would lose points. Limit your attachments to only relevant documents. Again, letters of support should really only be from community-based organizations. Do not put photos or maps because these applications are duplicated several times over and it won't reproduce very well. The other pointer I would give is just make sure that you put a page number on your page numbers on your application because it goes through a copier and anybody who's ever used a copier to do double-sided copying knows that the machine might eat that and it's hard to kind of piece together what parts of the application goes where for the person who's doing the copy, and so I would say make sure you use page numbers. Other helpful preparation tips?
Yeah.
Contact your state and tribe for threshold and eligibility questions. Make sure that you're tying into any ongoing master planning and talk about that within your proposal and how that fits in with the stakeholders. And then lastly, looking at slide 46, these are just some contacts for our website, both from Region 8, 9, and Region 10. And then if you want some web-based resources, here's some more information where you can go to find out more. The previous, the FY13 guidelines will be posted at that website. There's frequently asked questions, and then just some general information on the RLF grants. And so now we will open it up for questions. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. So just a note, I do have someone who's not on mute. I can hear you murmuring to yourself. So I will just double check to make sure if you hit star six, I'll make sure that you are muted. We're going to go ahead and start taking questions. I don't have any in the online queue, so please, if you haven't started to type them up electronically, get started now. Again, it's the question mark icon at the top of the screen. You need to be sure your pop-up blockers are disabled so that when you click that question mark icon, that new window will open up and you can type up your comment or question. While we wait to see if we get any questions submitted electronically, I'm going to go ahead and turn to the phone lines. And if you have a question or comment based on the material you've seen, please feel free to take yourself off of mute, but only if you have a question or comment. Again, you can use your own mute button if that's how you muted in the first place to unmute, or hit pound six to unmute your line. We'd ask that you identify yourself or organization before asking your question.
This is Sarah Russell at EPA in Region 9. I just wanted to add one more resource for everybody on the phone, which is where you registered for this event at epa.gov/region9/brownfields. If you go back to that site, you also find a link to all the previous webinars we've done, and they've all been archived there, as well as this one when it gets archived, so you can always go back and see all the materials and listen to previous webinars.
Thank you. Any participants have a question or comment? Remember, it's #6 to unmute.
This is Dawn Wright from DTSC in Region 9.
Go ahead.
This question is related to the leveraging dollars. And my question is, once an entity has obtained leveraging dollars and they wish to apply for a second loan, can they continue to use the leverage money that they had from the previous year, or must they find an additional sum?
Hi, this is Ted. And so it's my understanding that they're applying for, the same entity is applying for a second loan from the grantee for a cleanup project?
No, say, for in order to the revolving loans require say it's the state, and the state receives money from EPA to do these revolving loans.
Okay.
And the state has ponied up their portion of the required dollars, the match money.
Okay.
And they take that match money and they dedicate it in a fund and leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But they use all the revolving loan funds. Can they continue to use that dedicated fund for an additional loan, or must they find more money and utilize that money for the this loan cycle?
So, Ted, this is Noemi. I'll answer.
Go ahead. Thanks, Noemi.
Yeah. DTSC actually has a revolving loan fund, so the 20% match that is coming in from those who are taking loans, it can be reused again to make a loan. So we call that program income that's going to be revolving. So that's different than actually applying for a grant and kind of the what I heard was your initial question on leveraging the dollars. So there's a difference between the cost share match that you have and then the leveraging of dollars that we're asking for to illustrate that you would have the money. The leveraged dollars are to illustrate that once the remediation, the loan is done, and you've cleaned up the site, we don't want the site to just sit there. We want the site to be moved into redevelopment. So those leverage dollars would be either used to make the redevelopment happen, or there may be leverage dollars because the cleanup is so great that the loan amount they get may not be enough. So we want to make sure that the cleanup actually gets done.
Okay. And then the cost share. So the funds for the cost share, if they have them in place, so, for example, say it's the City of Oakland, and the City of Oakland has applies for the dollars for a revolving loan program, and they have their cost share amount, and they want to apply again to the EPA for revolving loan dollars, and they still have that cost share in a dedicated fund. Can they use that dedicated fund again to have their cost share? Or maybe I'm confusing words because I'm
Yeah.
Not.
You know what? My information, I'm Noemi Emmerich Ford. My information is on Cluin, because this is a very Region 9 type specific, you know, kind of question specific. Follow up with me and I'll explain it to you a little bit more.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Anybody else on the telephone lines with a question or comment for the presenters? Okay, we do have some online questions that have been submitted, so in the interest of time, I'm going to turn to those, but we'll step back with the telephone line participants in a minute. If you did unmute, please go ahead and use *6 to remute your phones. The first question coming in online is going to come in from Pennsylvania, and they actually are asking, what is the ACRES database?
Oh, hi, this is Ted. I brought that up earlier, and I can answer that. The ACRES database is a system, an online system that we use to keep track of the accomplishments achieved by our grantees. So as a grantee completes an assessment or completes a cleanup, they input the property profile information into the system that we call ACRES, and then we can keep track of not only the assessment that was completed or the cleanup that was completed, but also the dollars leveraged, jobs created, acres ready for reuse. And then, of course, we as the Brownfields Program use those accomplishments to kind of tout our successes and tell Congress and other folks that we are achieving results and doing good things. So that's kind of a basic on acres. Noemi, anything else to add on that?
No, but I think there's a couple more questions.
Okay.
Come online.
Yep. The next question comes in from Erie, Pennsylvania, and they ask, if only 13 RLF projects are funded, what is the number of applications that are received?
This is Ted again. I think we received roughly 40 RLF proposals in FY12.
Right. So the only thing I would add the caveat to that is with the FY12 guidelines, applications were only open to those who did not have a current RLF grant. So it was only open to those who we would consider to be new grantees. This year for FY13, it's going to be open to everyone. So we anticipate there would probably be more grant applications coming in.
Great. Our next question comes in from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they ask, if you are looking for shovel-ready and the applicant has a brownfield consultant under contract, can this contract with the existing consultant be used for the QEP requirement for the RLF?
So this is Noemi in Region 9. If you are planning to pay them using the brownfields grant funds, unfortunately, you would not be able to unless you could demonstrate to your region that you had followed the federal procurement requirements in bringing that and selecting that contractor to come on board. So oftentimes, units of government and their contracting requirements for bringing someone on board to do work is very similar to the federal contracting requirements. So if you can illustrate that to your region, then it could be possible. Ted, I don't know if you want to add anything else.
No, I think that's fine. Thanks.
Okay, great. And so our very next question comes in from Olympia, Washington, and they ask, if you are currently an RLF recipient and you apply for a second RLF grant, can you use the program income earned from the first grant to match the second grant?
This is Ted, and I believe that the match requirement, or the match earned, needs to stick with each grant. So program income earned from the first grant would, if it's match eligible, would need to be applied only to that first grant, and then you would have to show match separately for a second grant. Noemi, is that your understanding?
Yeah, I think you're right, Ted. I would say you're in Region 10, so I would say, Bill, I would suggest you follow up with Deborah Burgess or Susan Morales directly on your particular question, just to make sure that we've captured the entire nuance. There could be a different answer.
That's a good idea.
Okay, great. I don't have any more online questions in the queue, so I'm going to turn back to the telephone lines. We have a few minutes left still. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or comment for our speakers, please feel free to take yourself off of mute and identify yourself and organization. It's #6 if you need to unmute.
This is Bruce Nicholson. I'm with the State of North Carolina. I had a question as to what would be the advantage or disadvantage or difference, really, in applying for supplemental funds versus a new grant, if you already hold a grant?
This is Ted in Region 8, and, you know, I would say probably the main advantage of a new grant is that you could potentially get more funding. You know, of course, with a new grant, you have to go through the process of filling out a proposal and applying and that sort of thing. But with new grants, I think with supplemental, the awards are tied to very specific projects that you have, that you already have. And I think, you know, funding in this last round pretty much maxed out around $400,000 or $500,000. And again, it was tied to those specific projects. So with a new grant, you're going to have a little more flexibility with the type of projects you can work on, and you could potentially get more funding. Noemi, feel free to expand on that if you'd like.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that if you have specific questions, you're calling from North Carolina, Wanda Jennings is the contact in the Region 4 office. So you could email her. It's her last name, jennings.wanda@epa.gov.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else? Any other questions from the phone lines? Okay. I don't see if we've got no other questions in the online queue. So in the interest of – oh, go ahead. Is there a question on the phones? Okay. All right. So I don't have any more questions in the queue, and I don't think I have anybody else on the telephone lines. So I'm going to – oh, actually, here we go. Another question came in from Washington. When will the next round of supplemental grants be released?
Well, this is Ted again, and we just finished the supplemental round for this year, where we actually had two rounds in fiscal year 12. And the next round we anticipate will probably be January, February 2013.
Okay, great. Any other last questions or comments on the phone lines? Remember, it's #6 to unmute. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and turn back to Ted as well as Naomi to see if they have any final comments or thoughts that they want to leave you with before I start the closeout procedures.
I don't have anything else, Jean. Thanks a lot. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to call Noemi or myself for contact in your region.
Okay. And Naomi?
That's it. Thank you, Jean.
Okay, great. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and move everyone along to the second to last slide, slide number 49, which is our resources and feedback slide. If you are sitting at a computer with internet access or looking at the slides in a web browser window, there are two hyperlinks you'll see on slide number 49. The first one is the link to the resources page. And on that page, you'll be able to download a copy of the presentation materials, as well as take a look at a number of other websites and resources related to the topic. I believe we have links to the Brownfields coordinators, links to things like TabEZ, and a number of the regional Brownfields program websites. The other link on slide number 49 is linked to our short feedback form. It takes just a minute to fill that out, and I know that there are some very specific questions that were gathered for the Brownfields grant seminars. So we would ask that you take a moment to fill that form out. If you'd like to see future sessions delivered this way, please let us know through the feedback form. If you share the line with multiple participants, each individual person can actually hop on and fill out their own feedback form. There'll be a link that you can click on to let someone else share their own feedback. If you're looking to get credit for your participation today, while we don't issue CEUs or PDHs through CLUIN, if you signed up and have the confirmation email message from me, you may be able to take that along with the confirmation message you get when you fill out feedback and keep that with the slides and get credit from your accrediting institution that's looking for the hours. So, again, just be sure when you fill out the feedback form, your email address is filled in correctly, and you check the box, and you can have a confirmation message sent to you for your own records. Move everybody along to slide number 50. Just a short little advertisement for us here at CLUIN. We do try very hard to offer the best and latest and greatest information related to the world of cleaning up hazardous waste sites. So not only do we run the CLUIN.org website, we offer a number of free monthly newsletters like TechDirect. We have RSS feeds and podcasts and iTunes. We offer internet seminars such as this. But you can even find us on things like Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So I'd encourage you to go ahead and stay connected and talk with us. Post things, ask questions, look for resources, because we are there to try to share the information that we have. Again, today's session was recorded and will be available in approximately 1 week. You'll automatically get an email from me once that recording is available. And as Sarah mentioned from Region 9, they do have a website where they have all of the archive seminars sort of aggregated up so you can go back and replay any one of the other seminars that were hosted earlier this summer as part of this series. I want to thank the organizers in EPA Region 9, as well as those supporting them from EPA's Region 8 and 10, to help deliver the Brownfield Seminar Series this summer on CLUIN. I also want to thank all of you who joined us from actually all over the country as part of the seminar series. I hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time. So we're coming right up on our schedule within time of 5 p.m. Eastern. So again, thank you all so much for joining us. I hope that this has been useful to you and that we'll either see you or hear from you on a future Clue-In seminar. Thanks very much. This will be the formal conclusion for today's seminar. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.